Okay, today's daf is Shabbat daf Yud Tet. We're at the bottom of Yud Chet. I'm on bet at the two dots. Dan Rabbanan, Beit Shammai, Omrim Lo Yimkor Adam Chamtzel Inochri Ela Im Ken Yodea Bo Shi Yochla Kodem HaPesach. So similarly, we're talking about things that you couldn't do right before their end time, even though you're doing it with a non-Jew, because you don't want them to do it at a time that would be usher for you. So for example, if your expectation, your responsibility is to get rid of the chametz, then you have to make sure the chametz is gotten rid of before Pesach. And just selling it to a non-Jew, says Beit Shammai, right before Pesach, in a way that he could not get rid of it before Pesach, is not proper. Because you have to make sure it's completely gotten rid of, meaning either eaten or destroyed. Now, if you don't want to eat it or destroy it, you can sell it to a non-Jew, but he has to have enough time to eat it and then or destroy it. And if he chooses not to, that's his prerogative. Okay, so that's what he says. However, Beit Hillel omrim kol zman shemutar le'ochlo mutar le'mochro. So Beit Hillel says that as long as you could technically be eating it, meaning right before Pesach, then you could sell it to a non-Jew. Rabbi Yehuda says as follows: Kutach habavli v'kol minei kutach asur le'mochro limkor lamed yom kodem haPesach. So kutach habavli, basically kutach habavli was this dish, very very sharp and strong tasting dish made from like spoiled bread and other things that was used to dip other things into, and you only needed just a tiny amount for a lot of flavor. So you wouldn't normally sit down and eat it in one sitting. Because of that, you wouldn't eat it all together, so you have to sell it 30 days beforehand. Because if you follow Beit Shammai's Shita, that you need to give him a reasonable amount of time to finish the food before the Isser comes into play, then you can't give that to him 5 minutes before Pesach, even though in theory you could consume it 5 minutes before Pesach. It's not normal to consume 5 minutes before Pesach. What comes to mind for me is like if you have a tiny, tiny bottle of like vanilla extract, you take months to use that because you put a tiny amount in, it's very concentrated flavor. So it's the same by here, even though it's very small amount, you generally don't eat it all in one sitting. It takes a long time to finish, and therefore, if you're going to sell it before Pesach, you have to do it a long time before Pesach. That's according to Beit Shammai's. So you give food to a dog on Shabbat in your chatzer, right, in a domain that you're allowed to carry into. The dog is allowed to carry that out of the domain. That's no longer your responsibility. You give it to him, and the dog kind of takes it wherever he'd like to take it. That's not hotzah. That's not considered like you're taking it out of your domain, using your dog to do something that you couldn't do by yourself. Similarly, you're allowed to put food in your chatzer before a non-Jew, and if he takes it out, that's his prerogative. He's not doing something on your behalf. Why did you have to teach me both of those cases? They seem to be the exact same halacha, the same exact case. You put it in front of a dog and he takes it out. You put it in front of a non-Jew and he takes it out. Neither one of them is your business, because what would you have said? Hi, Rami Alei, v'hai, lo Rami Alei, kamashmalan. The dog, feeding the dog is your responsibility, so maybe we're more makil with you put in front of your dog, and then whatever happens, happens, but you have to give it to him. You have to feed him. That's your expectation. But you don't have to feed the non-Jew, and if you don't have to give food to the non-Jew, then maybe you shouldn't be putting it out and having him remove it from your chatzer. Maybe that looks like he's doing something on your behalf. The dog isn't doing something on your behalf. You just have to feed him. So that's teach me both of those cases. You shouldn't rent out things to a non-Jew Erev Shabbat. Bidalid ubehe mutar. But on Wednesday or Thursday, it will be mutar. The significance of Wednesday and Thursday, of Yom Revi'i and Yom Chamishi, is that Yom Revi'i, you already have to start thinking about the next Shabbat. We're going to see a couple implications of that in the continuation. But Bidalid ubehe, Yom Revi'i, Yom Chamishi, Wednesday and Thursday, you have to be thinking about the next Shabbat, whereas Yom Shlishi, Yom Shani are kind of shy to the previous Shabbat, and you don't have to be thinking about the up and coming Shabbat. We're going to see what that means. Similarly, you shouldn't send letters with a non-Jew Erev Shabbat. However, on Wednesday or Thursday, Yom Revi'i, Yom Chamishi, you're allowed to send them because he has enough time to do his malacha before Shabbat. Amru alav Rabbi Yossi HaKohen v'amri lal Rabbi Yossi HaChassid. It was said about Rabbi Yossi the Kohen and some say Rabbi Yossi the Chassid, shelo nimtza ktav yado biyad nochri me'olam, that he would never send letters with a non-Jew lest that he bring them somewhere on Shabbat, even though he's fully allowed to. He didn't want to, he didn't like the idea that his letters were being brought somewhere on Shabbat. So our rabbis taught that you're not allowed to send a a letter with a non-Jew on Erev Shabbat because he's going to be bringing it on Shabbat, unless you give him a set fixed amount of money from beforehand. You say, this is your money when you do the malacha. It's completely your choice, up to you when you do the malacha. You're working for yourself. You're not my employee. You're not doing something on my behalf on Shabbat. You already have the money. This is the money that you're receiving. You do that whenever you want. And then this is the money that you will receive from it. Then if you choose to do it on Shabbat, that's your problem. That's your decision. You're allowed to choose to do that on Shabbat. But don't think that you're doing it on my behalf on Shabbat. You're not my active employee at this moment. Beit Shammai Omrim Kadesh Yagia Lebeito. Beit Shammai Omri says you have to give it to him with enough time that he can reach his house. Beit Hillel Omrim Kadesh Yagia Lebeito Samuch. Beit Hillel says, Lechoma. You have to just get outside the community. Vahalo Katsats Amar. Vahalo Katsats. Right? But wait a second. Didn't we say that if you give him a set amount of money, then you can give it to him 5 minutes before Shabbat? Why all of a sudden are we saying that he has to have enough time to reach his house or the house of his community? Right? You give him a set amount of money. That should be fine. He should, Amar Rav Shesha Hachikamar, Im Lo Katsats. Well, so, Rav Shesha says, yeah, what do we teach? You have to give him a set amount of money, and then you could do it, and then you can give it, and then you can give it to him at any point before Shabbat. But what if you did not? If you did not give him a set amount of money, meaning it's kind of like he's your active employee at this moment, that at that point, how long before Shabbat do you have to give it to him if you don't give him a set amount of money? So it's like he's like your employee. Then you just have to give it to him on enough time for him to, according to Beit Shammai, reach his home. According to Beit Hillel, reach the house outside of your community. Beit Shammai Omrim Achigi Lebeito. Beit Hillel Omrim Achigi Lebeito Samuch Lechoma. Those are the stipulations if you did not give him a set amount of money beforehand. In that case, Vamarta Resha and Mishalchin. Wait, but you said initially that you're not supposed to send him at all in Lokatzat Lodamim. Isn't that how the Tanur Rabbanan start? Tanur Rabbanan, you're not allowed to send him unless you were kotetz lo damim. And now we're saying, oh, this is what you do if you weren't kotetz lo damim. But you said you were not allowed to send him if you weren't kotetz lo damim at all. Ha reisha ein mishalchin lo kasha ha dekavi le bei dor b'mata v'ha de lo kavi le dor b'mata. That's not a difficulty. One is talking about where you have set postage service in your city, and one is where you don't. Right. So if you have set postage service in your city, then you can give it to him before Shabbat, with enough time that he should take it out. If you don't have set postage service in your city, then you are not allowed to give it to him unless you're kotetz lo damim. Because if you have a set thing, then he works for the government. He doesn't really work for you. He works for a different outfit altogether, in which case he's not your employee and it's fine. Dan Rabbanan en mefligin mesfina b'chot megimel yomim kodem l'Shabbat. Right? You're not allowed to go out onto a boat, onto a ship 3 days before Shabbat. Why? What's the concern here? Well, when you're on a ship, a lot of things become pikuach nefesh, right? You don't want to die at sea, right? So you have to do a lot of different malachot, a lot of different things that would seemingly be usher so that you don't die out at sea. Now, if it's pikuach nefesh, then you're fine. You have to do it on Shabbat in order to stay alive. But who says you're allowed to put yourself into that situation? Who says you're allowed to put yourself into a situation that you know for a fact that on Shabbat you're going to have to break something in order for pikuach nefesh? Yeah, if you're in that situation, if it arises incidentally, then that's how you have to respond. But you're going to put yourself into a situation where you have to be mechallel Shabbat just to save your life? So maybe you're not allowed to do that. So we made a distinction that starting from Yom Revi'i, you're already thinking about the up and coming Shabbat. In which case, if it's Yom Shlishi, and you don't have to be considering the up and coming Shabbat, then, like, so 4 days before Shabbat, you're allowed to go out to sea. And if you're still at sea on Shabbat, and then you do what you have to do. However, if it's already Yom Revi'i and you have to be planning for the up and coming Shabbat, at that point, we consider it irresponsible to put yourself in a situation where you're going to have to be breaking Shabbat. At the point, you already have to be thinking about the up and coming Shabbat. So, if it's less than 3 days before Shabbat, you're not supposed to put yourself in that situation. You shouldn't go out to sea. But that's all I'm talking about is Dvar HaRashut. You're going on a vacation, you're going on a cruise. Aval Dvar Mitzvah, Shapir Dami. If you're going for a mitzvah, then it's perfectly allowed because you're going onto the ship for a dvar mitzvah, and then if pikuach nefesh comes up, it's totally allowed to respond. You just can't opt to go on a ship and then put yourself in a situation you have to do pikuach nefesh. Upasko imo amanat lishbot, right? And you should set with the, meaning you're a worker on this ship, right? But you shouldn't get paid for Shabbat, right? You shouldn't design it milachatchila that you're getting paid 7 days a week so that you're saying, no matter the circumstances, I'll be working on Shabbat because I'm officially hired to work for you on Shabbat, right? You should set it with him that you're only paid 6 days a week. Ve'eno shovit. However, even though you're saying, don't pay me for Shabbat, don't, factor Shabbat into my paycheck. I don't want to plan milchat chila that I'm going to be working on Shabbat. Once you do that, if incidentally something arrives on Shabbat and it's pikuach nefesh, then of course you're allowed to work. Divrei Rebbe. That's Rebbe's shita. So you're allowed to work on Shabbat if it's pikuach nefesh, and you're allowed to put yourself into that situation if either it's a mitzvah or it's before Yom Shlishi. However, you shouldn't get paid for that, because that's planning to work on Shabbat regardless. But if you don't plan to work on Shabbat and you're not getting paid milchatchila for Shabbat, but then something comes up on Shabbat, you're allowed to work. Rishon Gamliel omer eretz tzarech. Rishon Gamliel says, no, you do not need to orchestrate the payment in that fashion. Umitzor letzidon afilu b'erev Shabbat mutar. And you're even allowed to go out onto a ship erev Shabbat, because Friday was Yom Shishi, was a day in the marketplace. It's totally normal. You're going for a specific reason. You're not going intending to be stuck there on Shabbat. It looks like you're just going for the day. Tanu b'nan. Ein tzaren al harot shel nochrim pachot megibel yomim kodem Shabbat. So similarly, you should not go try to conquer territory in an army less than 3 days before Shabbat, because you're putting yourself in a situation where if it takes more than 3 days, you're very likely going to have to be Mechal Shabbat. Now, you're allowed to be Mechal Shabbat. It's for Pikuach Nefesh. You're in a war. But you shouldn't put yourself in that situation Milchatchila if it's already Yom Revi'i. V'mitchilu ein mafsikin. And if you've already started, however, then you don't stop. You have to go to the end. V'chein haya Shammai Omer, and that's what Shammai would say. Ad ridata afilu b'Shabbat, right? That you have to fight until a divisive victory, even if that's going to be on Shabbat. Amar b'shimu ben Gamliel, no hagin hayu. So this is a reference back to the Mishnah, with regarding not giving clothing to non-Jewish launderers too close to Shabbat. Tanya, Amar b'tzadok, kach haya minago shel beit Ben Gamliel. That was the minog of the house of Ben Gamliel. Shayu notin klei lavan l'koves gimel yomim kodem l'Shabbat. They would give white clothing to launderers 3 days before Shabbat, so that they would give them plenty of time to finish it before Shabbat. Vitzvuim afilu be'erev Shabbat. However, they would give colorful clothing even erev Shabbat, because it wouldn't take very long to wash. Midvareim labanim shalavanim kashim lichkavsan yoter min etzvuim. Right, and from their words, we learn that it's harder to wash white clothing than to wash colorful clothing. Right, what's the nafkamina of that regarding the money that you should be paying for the people who are laundering your clothing? Abaye have a yahiv lehahu mana detzvia. So Abaye would give spoke about one who pays. Who gives colorful clothing, lekatzra, to a launderer. Amar le kama ba'ita iluve. So Abaye asked him, Abaye gave colorful clothing to a launderer, and then he asked him, how much should I pay you to wash this? Amar le kichiyuta. He said, the same as you would pay me for white clothing. What's the question? Amar le kvar kadmucha rabbanan. He says, no, the rabbanan already taught me, that it's easier to wash wash colorful clothing than white clothing, so why am I paying you as much as I'm paying for white clothing? Amar Abaye, hai mande yayiv mana lekatzra, to be mashcha nativ le. Rabbi similarly gives advice to someone who is giving his clothing to a launderer. You should measure it beforehand, you should measure it afterward. Because if you get it back bigger than it was before, then he ruined your shirt by stretching it out. If you get it back smaller than it was before, then he ruined your shirt by shrinking it. So you should be very careful that you know exactly how big your shirt is before you give it to the launderer. Now we're talking about, everyone agrees that if you put the beam on top of the olives erev Shabbat, well, you're allowed to put the beam on top of the olives erev Shabbat and let the beam slowly crush the olives, and the oil will go out on Shabbat. Everyone agrees that's allowed. Mishna kul hu de gazru bu bechamai umay shamer korbet abad vigulei hagad de lo gazru. Hanak, right? So why exactly is this different? Meaning, all Beit Shammai says you're not allowed to do anything erev Shabbat if it's not going to fully be done before Shabbat. But here, by crushing the olives, by putting the millstone onto the olives and letting all the shemen go out, here all of a sudden Beit Shammai says you're allowed to, but it's going out on Shabbat. Hanak de'i avid lehu b'Shabbat mechayev chatat gazer behu Beit Shammai om Beit Shammai. Gazrihu Beit Shammai Erev Shabbatim Chashecha Korbet Abad Veigulei Hagad Iavidlu B'Shabbat Lo Mechayev Chatat Lo Gazru. It's a very easy distinction to make here. The things that would be usher to do on Shabbat itself. So Beit Shammai says you can't do these Erev Shabbat and let them finish their process on Shabbat. But putting the bad on the olives on Shabbat itself wouldn't be Asur De'oraita. You wouldn't be Chayev Chatat for doing so. In which case, I'm not going to make a gzera about doing it on Erev Shabbat. Man Tana. Okay, but who is the author of this? Who is the Tana who says the Kol Midi De'it De'ati Memela Shapir Dami? Who says that anything that comes out by itself, you're not actively crushing it. You put the stone on top, and then the liquid, the oil, is going out by itself, flowing naturally, as opposed to by a direct result of you crushing it. Who says that that's okay? Who says that you can then use the oil on Shabbat? I'm Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina, Rabbi Shmuel. So Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina's shita is that this is Rabbi Shmuel who says that anything that goes out by itself is mutter. Ditnan, as we learned in the Mishnah, hashum vehaboser vehamelilot. So the crushed grapes or the crushed garlic or the crushed grains shiraskan mi ba'odiyom that you fully ground up erev Shabbat. Rabbi Shmuel Omer Yigmor Mishatichshach. Rabbi Shmuel says totally legitimate that they should be continuing to flow out once it's already Shabbat, and then you could benefit from what flows out of them. Rabbi Akiva Omer, lo yigmor. Rabbi Akiva, however, says, no, you're not allowed to finish the process of all the flowing out of the fruit on Shabbat itself. If you want to benefit from those fruit, you have to make sure everything flows out erev Shabbat. So it's clear that Rabbi Shmuel's shita is that once it's flowing out from by itself, then you're allowed to benefit from it, in which case he's probably the person who says that anything that comes out mamela by itself, you're allowed to benefit from, as clearly exemplified in that Mishnah. However, that's Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina's Shita, that it's Rabbi Shmuel's Shita, as we see in that teaching, in that Braita. However, Rabbi Elazar disagrees. Amar Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Elazar hi. So Rabbi says, this is Rabbi Elazar's Shita, not the same Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua's Shita, that's who we're referring to. Adetnan, chalot devasha riskan be'erev Shabbat, if you ground up, honeycombs, erev Shabbat, v'yatzu me'atzman, and then honey flowed out, asur, that's Tanakam B'shita, Rabbi Elazar, matir. Rabbi Elazar says, no, the honey that flows out of the honeycombs will be mutar to eat, in which case, once the honey flows out by itself, we see it as mutar to eat, and that's Rabbi Elazar's Shita, so it seems like Rabbi Elazar would be the one who holds that something that flows by itself would be mutter to take advantage of, right? Now, you can't crush it up and make it flow on Shabbat, right? That's a problem, tochen, maybe schita, whatever it is. However, if it does it by itself, that's allowed. That's what our Mishnah suggests. And now we tried to say that our Mishnah is either the Shita of Rabbi Shmuel, who seems to paskin that something that flows by itself is allowed, and then, or alternatively, Rabbi Elazar, who paskins that something that flows by itself is allowed. But now we're gonna have to answer the following dilemma, right? Because Rabbi Yossi ben Chanina is convinced that this is Rabbi Shmuel's Shita. Rabbi Elazar is convinced that this is Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua's Shita. And you have to ask, well, if Rabbi Yossi ben Chanina knew Rabbi Elazar's Shita, and Rabbi Elazar knew Rabbi Shmuel's Shita, why didn't Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina say that this is Rabbi Elazar's Shita? And why didn't Rabbi Elazar say that this is Rabbi Shmuel's Shita? Why did Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina Davka say, no, this is Rabbi Shmuel, and then Rabbi Elazar Davka say this is Rabbi Elazar's Shita? Could it be that each one had a problem with suggesting like the other person? So Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina, my time alo Amar Rabbi Elazar. Why didn't Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina hold like Rabbi Elazar that this is Rabbi Elazar's Shita? Amar Lecha, or Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina would have said to you, Hatamadumi Kara Ochel Vasof Ochel Hachami Kara Ochel Vashta Mashke. Because by the honey, by the honeycomb, you have food. It's a solid. And honey is also considered a food. So you have a solid coming from a solid. That's not schita. So why is that a chiddush? Just because I know that you have solid, if a solid flows out of a solid, that I'm allowed to eat it, that doesn't teach me that if a liquid flows out of a solid, that I'm allowed to eat it. That's schita. Schita is an iser deoraita. So if I'm not allowed to do it via dime, if I'm not allowed to squeeze it actively on Shabbat, then maybe if it leaves it by itself, I'm not allowed to benefit from it on Shabbat. Now, I know that I am allowed to benefit from Shabbat from Rabbi Shmuel's shita, because he's talking about liquid coming from a solid. However, Rabbi Elazar's Shita is talking about solid coming from a solid. That doesn't really teach me anything. That's why Rabbi Elazar ben Chanina did not want to. That's why Rabbi Yossi ben Chanina did not want to learn from Rabbi Elazar's Shita. He wanted to learn Rabbi Shmuel's Shita, which he thought was much more comparable, and which he thought was a good proof that he could be the author of the Mishnah. Whereas learning from Rabbi Elazar, who talks about a solid from a solid, doesn't really teach you anything. Rabbi Elazar, Amar Lecha, Hashem Inale, Rabbi Elazar, Da Afilu Zeitim Vanavim Nami Shari. So wait, what would Rabbi Elazar say to that? Meaning, we have two things we have to do. First of all, we do have to ask why Rabbi Elazar didn't hold like Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina that this is Rabbi Shmuel's Shita. But before we even ask why Rabbi Elazar didn't hold like Rabbi Shmuel, now we just challenged Rabbi Elazar's Shita, meaning, because what would I say now? Yeah, it's completely illogical to learn it from honey and honeycomb. But Rabbi Elazar still thinks it's logical to learn it from honey and honeycomb. Why would that be the case? Meaning, not only is it interesting that he doesn't hold like Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina that this is Rabbi Elazar's Shita, it's interesting that he even thought that was a good proof from Rabbi Elazar's Shita. Rabbi Elazar's Shita seemingly has nothing to do with our case. Rabbi Elazar's Shita is about solid from a solid. Why does he think that even teaches us what we want it to teach us? So first he has to respond about why his proof is good, and then he has to pose a problem with Rabbi Yishmael, which is Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina's Shita. So he says as follows, that actually we know from elsewhere, a totally different source, that Rabbi Elazar is actually okay, even with something illiquid that came from a solid. Afil zaitim venavim nami sharu shari deha ki ata ravoshia minarda ata vaiti matniti biyade zaitim venavim shabriskan me'erev shabbat v'yatsu me'atzman asurin rulezer ravishun matirin. So it's clear from here. So we see from here that there's a mefurish brayta where Rabbi Elazar believes that that liquid that came out of grapes would be perfectly allowed to benefit from on Shabbat as long as they came out on their own. In which case, Rabbi Elazar did not only holds that solid from solid, like honey from honeycomb, would be okay, but also that liquid from solid would be okay as long as it came out by itself. In which case, yeah, you have a proper raya. So then Rabbi Yosef bar Chanina, what would he say to that? Breita lo shmielei. Rabbi Yosef bar Chanina, breita lo shmielei. He never heard that breita. He didn't know that was Rabbi Elazar's shita. And you also have to ask, like, meaning if the second case was about liquid coming from a salad and that's Rabbi Elazar's shita, seemingly it would have made more sense just to teach the second case. Why do you teach me a case? Oh, I know this is Rabbi Elazar's shita, and I'll teach you a case of honey from honeycomb, which is solid from a salad. Well, solid from a salad doesn't really help us. Oh yeah, but don't worry. He also holds liquid from a salad. Okay, then just teach the case of liquid from a salad. No, we probably, this isn't the first Gemara, but he probably just taught this first case because that's a Mishnah that everyone knows. The second case was a Breita that apparently Rabbi Yosef bar Chanina never even heard of, in which case it wasn't so convincing to bring it from there. Not everyone had heard of it, and certainly Rabbi Yosef bar Chanina never heard of it, and that's why he brought in Rabbi Shmuel Shita and not Rabbi Yosef and not Rabbi Elazar Shita. Okay, now we have to go back and ask why Rabbi Elazar, didn't teach that this was Rabbi Shmuel Shita like Rabbi Yosef bar Chanina did. Rabbi Elazar, my time, Amar Rabbi Yosef bar Chanina. So why didn't he teach Rabbi Yosef bar Chanina that is Rabbi Shmuel Shita? Amar Lcha Alavit Mar La, because didn't we say about that case? Amar Rav bar Chanina, Amar Rabbi Yochanan b'mechusarin dicha. Right, that b'mechusarin dicha the kulei amelo pligi. Everyone agrees. There are basically two stages of the mashing up or grinding up of the fruit in order to get the liquid out. First you have dicha, and then you have shechika. Right, dicha is like pressing it or like smushing it, whatever it may be. The English words that we use are just going to be arbitrary, but they have the preliminary stages of the mashing up and the secondary stages of the mashing up that really gets all the liquid out of it. So everyone agrees that if it's missing that first stage, mechusar dicha, you didn't smash it at all, then everyone agrees it's going to be usur if something because you didn't prepare it before Shabbat. Kipligi mechusar in shechika, where they have the machloket is whether it already had dicha, but it's missing shechika. You didn't mash it up properly afterward, and therefore the liquid that comes out of it is subject to a machloket, right? Where Rabbi Akiva says the liquid that comes out of it is usur, Rabbi Shmuel says the liquid that comes out of it is mutter, but everyone would agree that if it's missing dicha, the first stage, then you cannot benefit from what comes out of it. And our Mishnah is like the case of mechusar dicha, right? In which case, if Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva are only arguing about a case that's mechusarin shchika, the second stage of mashing it up to get the liquid out, but mechusarin dicha, the first stage of mashing it up to get the liquid out, everyone agree that it's usur, or rather Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva would agree that it's usur, and our Mishnah is like a case of mechusarin dicha, then our Mishnah is a case that both Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva would think that it's usur. In which case, our Mishnah can't, so Rabbi Shmuel can't be the author of our Mishnah. Our Mishnah is a case of Mechusar Dicha, and even Rabbi Shmuel holds with Mechusar Dicha that it would be Aser. So he can't be the author. And that's why Rabbi Lazar would not hold that it's Rabbi Shmuel's Shita. Hor Rabbi Yosi Bar Chanina, Rabbi Shmuel. So Rabbi Yosi Bar Chanina, taught in the Shita of Rabbi Shmuel. Shemen shel bedadin. Similar, we're going to talk about now more things that have to do with the shemen, the oil that comes out of a beit habad. So shemen shel bedadin, right? So the oil that was left for the people who did the pressing. It was like oil, meaning the people who did the pressing worked for other people, and all the oil that was collected would be sold. However, the oil stuck in like the corners, like they could get it out and keep it for themselves, right? So oil shel bedadin, machatzalot shel bedadin, and the mats they used to catch all the oil. They would drain the oil from you, basically put like all the olive grinds onto these mats, and the liquid would drip out. So those two things, Rav Aser and Shmuel Shari. Rav says they're Aser to move, and Shmuel says they are mutter to move. Hani krache de zuze. Similarly, these big sheets used on boats, and they talk about sails. Rav Aser and Shmuel Shari. So Rav says you're not allowed to move, and Shmuel says you're allowed to move. I'm Rav Nachman Ez Lechalva, right? A goat. Goat designated for the use of milk, for getting its milk. And, Rachel Gizata. And a sheep designated for its wool. Vitarnegolet lebeitzata. And a chicken, or a hen that's designated for its eggs. Viture de ridia. And an ox designated for its
What's it called? The thing on its back that plows things. For the plow that you hooked up to it. Vitamer de iska, and dates used for selling. Rav Aser, Shmuel, Shari. Rav says that these things are Aser, and Shmuel says that they are Mutter. So what does it actually mean that it's Aser and that it's Mutter? Well, we're talking about Amar Mutter, Kamiflegi Bepluka, the Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon. Right? We're talking about the Machlok between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. What's the Machlok between Rabbi and Shimon? Muktzah. That's the machloket. Whether something designated for one purpose can be used for a different purpose on Shabbat or on Yom Tov. So, if we go back, now we understand all the machlokets a little bit better. So these mats and this oil that was not designated for use on Shabbat, it's designated for things that are only done on Chol, so you're not allowed to touch them on Shabbat because they would be muktzah. Well, that would be the machloket. Similarly, if you have certain animals that are designated for very, very specific things, on Yom Tov, you're allowed to shecht animals to eat, right? You're allowed to shecht animals to eat, for a Yom Tov meal, let's say. Unless you have the animal designated for a purpose aside from eating it. So you can't take a hen and shecht it on Yom Tov when that hen is designated for laying eggs. You can't take a goat and shecht it on Yom Tov when that goat is designated for giving you milk. It entered the day as not muchan l'shchita, right? It has to be ready. It has to be ready for shchita or designated for the possibility that you're going to be shochet it. However, if you started Yom Tov thinking this goat is for its milk, you can't then come and shecht it because it was muktzah. It was off limits. It was not in your realm of expectation to be using it for a shchita. So that's the machloket between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon in terms of muktzah, which we'll obviously get into much greater depth when we come to the sugyas of muktzah. Ahut, and now we're going to teach stories about different students who paskin like one rabbi as opposed to the other, regardless of the city that they found themselves in. They kind of learn the sugya and they paskin according to the sugya that the rabbi that they saw fit. Ha'u tamid, a certain student, de ori be charte de argiz, ki Rabbi Shimon. Right? So he said, he was in a place called charte de argiz, and he said, well, let's all follow Rabbi Shimon's shita as it pertains to muksa. Shamte Ravam Nuna. So Ravam Nuna put him in excommunication for doing that, v'hak Rabbi Shimon's virlan. But why would he put him in excommunication? We hold like Rabbi Shimon. V'asher de Rav Hava. No, because he was in a place that was under Rav's halachic jurisdiction, and Rav doesn't hold like Rabbi Shimon, so he should not have done that. Right? Rav was the mora de asher. Rav was the posek. He does not paskin like Rabbi Shimon. You can't just come into Rav's district, Rav's area where everyone's following Rav and say, oh, we should pass him like Rabbi Shimon. No, Rav disagrees, and that's not your prerogative to do so. Lo ibayile, lemi aved achi. So you shouldn't have done that. Hani tre talmide. So these two students, chad matzil b'chad mani, v'chad matzil b'arba v'chamesh mani. So it's similar, we're talking about different students who paskin like different amoraim. Right? There's basically a machloket. When it comes to, if a fire breaks out in your house, in theory, you could take out anything that's not muktzah, but we have a concern that if you're allowed to take out everything, then you're going to be very bothered by saving everything. You might ultimately, get caught up and put out the flame. So in order to prevent you from extinguishing the flame, you're only allowed to take out the things absolutely necessary for Shabbat, basically the three meals that you have to eat on Shabbat. You're allowed to go in and save those three meals, right? So the question is what the best way to go about doing that is. Can you take it out in all different containers? Meaning I'll take one meal out in this basket, one meal out in that basket, one meal out in that basket. Or did you put all three into one basket? And if you're putting all three into one basket and you're only carrying one basket, can I then add as much food as I want? Cause I'm not carrying any more than one basket. If I have one basket with three meals or one basket with 100 meals, does it really make a difference? So that's the two different students did different things. One took it all out in one basket and said, you know, I really shouldn't be. He took basically 100 meals out in one basket, right? He's saying, I'm going to minimize the carrying by one basket, but I'm going to maximize the food that I'm bringing out and bring out 100 baskets. The other student says, no, you're not allowed to maximize the food that you're bringing out. You don't need that food, but in Achinami, you're allowed to take it out in 3 different baskets. So one took out less food in more increments, one took out more food in less increments in accordance with the machloket between Kamiflegi Beplugta, the Rabba Bar Zveda ve Rav Huna. That's exactly what Rabba Bar Zveda and Rav Huna argued about, what is better to do. Do you take it out all in one increment and then you can take out as much food as you want, or do you take it out in multiple increments but you can only take exactly as much as you need? All right, we'll stop here at the Mishnah.